This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to the Milwaukee Basketball Hour Playoff Edition, presented by Cafe Benelux and featuring Steve Novak. Tonight's special guest is NBA champion and Milwaukee guard Jason Terry. Now, live from Cafe Benelux in the Third Ward, here's the big unit, Bill Michaels.
Welcome, and we are glad to have you. It is the Milwaukee Basketball Hour. We are broadcasting live. We are here at Cafe Benelux. That's where you can track us down, Cafe Benelux. We are down here in the Third Ward. I am Bill Michaels alongside Steve Novak, who is here as well, and also our guest tonight, Jason Terry. We are brought to you by our friends at Hupie and Abraham, Baker Tilly, Sharp Literacy, and Third Coast Provisions. We are enjoying the atmosphere. We want to enjoy it with a win, Jason. We want to enjoy it and have some optimism and things to look forward to coming up tomorrow night down at the Bradley Center. Let's start first and foremost with the first two games. I thought game one, you guys scrapped, you fought, you hung in there. Some really exciting moments, and really most people thought that was the game of the weekend. And I thought that's something to build upon. Let's talk about game two. What happened in game two?
Well, game one was an opportunity for us to steal a game on the road, which you want to do in a series. Game two, they just outworked us. They were more physical. And other than that, it's really not much to tell you. I mean, when you get beat up physically in a basketball game, you should be pissed off. You should be ready for that next game to come very quickly, and you should be ready to go. So there's not many adjustments strategically that I can tell you about. It's more about physicality, making your presence felt, and then coming into the Bradley Center, you already know the environment. It has to be a raucous crowd. We have to be from start to finish the much more physical team, period. There's no tricks here. There's no smoke and mirrors. It is come out, punch them in the mouth. You see, I got the Muhammad Ali beanie on here, you know. So it's going to be a fight. And if you are willing to put your body through the physical rigor that it's going to take to win a playoff basketball game, then you'll come out victorious.
No doubt. And so you're a guy who's played in a ton of playoff series. You've won a championship. You know, I think a lot of people watch those first two games, and obviously the first one, it set the table for what this series was going to be. It showed that there were two teams that it was going to come down to the last couple seconds, maybe a seven-game series. And then that second game, it seemed to go the other way. What would you say to the people that are watching that game knowing when a series shifts back home, having to play at TD, now being back at the Bradley Center? Is it realistic to think they win the first two, the Bucks win the next two?
It's realistic, but the more important thing is you have to take care of business in game three. I mean, you can't think ahead to a seven games. This is a one-game series, game by game, quarter by quarter. Okay, we haven't finished out quarters very well. They've went on, you know, runs of 12-2, 7-0 at the end of each quarter. We've been outplayed throughout this series, and that was game one, same thing in game two. We must end quarters better in the half and then end the game, you know, and do it decisively so we can, you know, put some doubt in the Celtics' mind. Right now they're confident. I mean, they're making every single shot. Those shots, I can almost guarantee you, will not go in the way they did in Boston.
Giannis seemed to be frustrated. Other players seemed to be frustrated. Morris was starting to kind of get a little yippy and yappy as well. Is that just something where you're feeling it, you're at home, you got the crowd behind you, this is what you're hoping for when you come back into the Bradley Center?
No doubt about it. I mean, you're at home where you're most comfortable. Physically, they should be the much more dominant team. But, you know, just because we're slight in stature and size doesn't mean that we can't mix it up a little bit and find opportunities to turn up the physicality. I mean, when you set screens, there's an opportunity. When they drive to the hole, there's another one. So I just think imposing our will on them physically, letting them know that we're going to touch you, you're going to feel us for a full 48 minutes is something that will start to put some doubt in their mind and bring down that little overconfidence that they seem to be playing with right now.
No doubt. And do you feel like, you know, there's been a few distractions at this point early in the playoffs versus is the Milwaukee Bucks team, what is their mood right now? What is the spirit on the team? Is there a distraction, or is it very much, look, we're just focused on this next game? Because there's always going to be noise no matter what's going on. People are talking about Jabari and Bledsoe's comments post-game, talking about he doesn't know who Rozier is. Do guys hear that at this point, or are you guys just today focused on the Celtics?
Well, for me, I've been in so many different series and scenarios. I've been down 0-2. In my very first playoff series to a Houston team that had Yao Ming and Tracy McGrady, we get it back together, and those two losses were at home, and we come back and win in seven games. I've been up 2-0 in the NBA Finals and got distracted, like you're talking about, and we end up losing in the NBA Finals, lose four straight games. So I've seen every bit of scenario. Right now, again, there is no distractions. You have to lock in again on every single possession and do what you need to do to help your team come out of here victorious. And so, yeah, you talk about Jabari unhappy with his minutes or what have you. That's going to happen. He's a young player. His first time, he's chomping at the bit. He wants to be out there to help his team. I totally get it. I understand it. Bledsoe, he hasn't been in the playoffs in a long while. The other guy is literally kicking his butt. I mean, that's what it is. He's kicking our butt. I mean, whoever we put on him, he's literally destroying us. So I just think each guy has to look inside himself and understand that, what strength do I have that I can bring to the table that will help my team come out with a victory here tomorrow night?
What do you say to Jabari? I mean, I know Giannis said we have to talk to him, we have to get in his ear, we have to make him feel that he has to be productive for us, and we can't let him kind of drift away. What do you, as a guy that's been there, done that, what do you say to Jabari?
Control the things you can control, and that's when you're out on the floor, your energy, your effort, and your ability to impact the game offensively is phenomenal. He's an X factor in this series if he's in the game. When he's not in the game, get involved. Twirl the towel around. Watch Jet. Stand up when Jet stands up. I mean, it's really simple. It's not really that complicated. But, again, when you're dealing with a young basketball player that hasn't played in these type of games throughout his career, you can see the frustration. I mean, so we don't get overblown. We don't get too high or get on Jabari too hard because we know he wears his emotions on his sleeve. And he's very passionate. He wants to play, and he wants to contribute.
And how much of that do you think, him being new, first time in the playoffs? Because when he was out, we had talked to him. The Bucks have been in the playoffs two other times. Of course, he was hurt.
Yeah.
Now he's finally out there. You also saw maybe the Celtics. They seem to be a very smart, well-coached team. Did you see that when Jabari got in the game, that the Celtics, they tried to go at Jabari. They tried to mess with his confidence. Al Horford, they tried to switch him onto Jabari and really attack him. It didn't even seem like Al was maybe even trying to score the ball. He just wanted to bang into Jabari.
Oh, yeah.
Let him know. Do you think that impacted him? Can he bounce back? Can he really have an impact on this series still?
Well, he definitely can, but it's all about mindset. The physical ability we know is there, but mentally, how tough are you willing to be? You know, and again, the only thing you can control is when that coach calls your name and you sprint to the scorer's table and you run in that game. That's it. Other than that, you cheer your team on and you be ready when your number's called.
When you talk about the coach, he said, certain guys are like, certain guys aren't. I'm not one of those guys, doghouse type of stuff. How can we, not to say that it should be a distraction, but how do you deal with that? Because you're not talking about X's and O's anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you don't allow it to be a distraction because it's really not. We're really talking about something minute because the enemy is over there in those green uniforms. We're not going to fight ourselves. Again, it's whoever's on board, whoever's ready to go out there and fight. That's who you want out here tomorrow night. Again, you got chihuahuas and you got dogs that live in the house, and then you got those pit bulls and Rottweilers that are outside the house. We want those dogs. Bring those to the fight, and we're going to come out of here with a victory.
And is that what you see a little bit when you hear Bledsoe too, when you say him say I don't know who Rozier is?
Yeah.
Is that taken the wrong way? Now, a lot of people weren't talking about the fact that Rozier had called Eric Bledsoe Drew Bledsoe a day before. So is that just him showing edge, showing fight? We know he knows who he is. Is that just him saying, look, I'm coming back out for him now?
Well, you got to realize in the playoffs, say we win game one, we're not even talking about Terry Rozier. Okay, and even though Bledsoe didn't have a great game, point guards are judged in this league on winning. Terry Rozier has won two games in this series, so of course we're going to talk to him. granted, he's playing out of his mind. No doubt about it. And it's not just now. This has been a good run for him since Kyrie Irving has been out. He's been given the opportunity, and he sees the moment. Give the kid credit. Good, hardworking kid, man. Do I dislike him right now because he's on another team? Yeah, damn right. But I love the way he plays. I love his spirit. I love his fight. But now, Bledsoe, are you ready to step up and take the challenge? I think he is.
Gus Johnson said to us the other day, he said that for Giannis to kind of emerge, he has to better his team by being selfish. Sometimes you have to just say, if I'm the guy, I just give it to me and let me go.
Who said that?
Gus Johnson. I had him on a show.
Did he play basketball before?
He did not. I'm asking
well,
you.
Well, that's the problem right there.
Okay.
Itself. We're not going to just give him the ball and let him go. Does he know strategically what the Boston Celtics are doing?
They're trying to say, you know, we're going to.
If you put on a uniform tomorrow night and we gave the ball and told you just to go, you'll end up in the front row. They got five guys in the paint defensively, and they are not going to allow any member on the Milwaukee Bucks to come in that paint unimpeded, untouched, for free baskets. Now, you'll see Giannis every now and then dipsy do and get in there and make a layup because he's fantastic at it. But their strategy is to keep us out of that paint. So to counter that, what you must do is take one or two dribbles and kick that ball to the nearest open person you can get it to without making a turnover.
And somebody's got to get hot. I mean, yeah. Isn't that what it is?
Somebody well, we're hot. Look at the percentages. If you're an analytic guy, you can say that this is the highest percentage we've shot from the field and from the three-point line. We're shooting 40% from three. We're shooting over 60% from the field. We're hot. We just got to make sure the ball is delivered on target and on time, and we will make shots.
That being said, so when you got that high of a shooting percentage, what else needs to happen? Better defensively?
Physicality.
Yeah.
Hit them, and then when you hit them again.
It's almost like a football mentality.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He's right. Look at those second-chance points. He's onto it. You hit those boys, keep them off the glass. Little physicality, and it's the playoffs, baby.
It's the playoffs.
It's the Milwaukee Basketball Hour featuring Steve Novak, Jason Terry alongside. I'm Bill Michaels. We're going to go ahead and take a quick break. We're broadcasting live. Cafe Benelux is where you can track us down. Stop in. We still got about 45 minutes until the program ends. Stay tuned. We got more right after this. Welcome back. It's the Milwaukee Basketball Hour featuring Steve Novak. I'm Bill Michaels alongside. Jason Terry is here with us as well. We are at Cafe Benelux. Cafe Benelux, beautiful place down here if you've never been. And we are sitting right on the corner down here by Broadway. And if you've ever been here, not only is downstairs really cool, but upstairs the patio is fantastic. So it's a terrific place. So you ever get a chance to come down, let us know and give them a review because I've been here about an hour. I love this place. It's fantastic. You ever been here before?
I've been here several times, but I'll tell you what, it's got to stop snowing before we can use that patio up top.
I know. We got to get rid of some of the snow in the state of Wisconsin. Not just Milwaukee, but the state of Wisconsin. I mean, up north, they're buried. It's like 3 feet of snow at this point. We're supposed to be playing baseball outside, throwing bags, and getting ready for grill outs and stuff, and watching the NBA on the backside of our house rather than the inside of our house. So, that being said, they've got another one coming up tomorrow night. Game three of this series between the Celtics and the Milwaukee Bucks down at the Bradley Center. Jason Terry alongside. So we were talking defensively speaking about being physical. Is there anything at this point? Look at it this way. Brad Stevens is getting a lot of credit for a lot of different things. Okay. Is there anything that they're doing that you haven't seen? And is it a little adjustment here? Or is this just they're banging, you're not right now, and you need to get more physical?
Definitely the only thing we hadn't seen is the big lineup. I mean, they're out there with three centers at times, which is something totally different. If you watched the NBA over the last 4 or 5 years, you haven't seen it. You know, these guys got three big bangers that they can go to, and they're not scared to put them out there on the floor. And I just think we need to do a better job of exploiting that lineup once they go to it. And again, yes, the banging and bruising, yeah, that's the big adjustment.
Is Brad Stevens what everybody talks about him, like this mythological being? He's smarter than everybody. He knows things that other coaches don't know. Is he that special?
I think his biggest skill set is getting his guys to play through exhaustion and do whatever he wants to get them to do. And they do it. And it's consistent, and they don't change. And I think that's his biggest strength and attribute because it's hard throughout an 82-game season to have the attention span of these young men who make obviously tons of money and can be distracted by plenty of things on and off the court. So I just think that's his biggest skill set, to be able to translate from college to the NBA. Because obviously the success of guys coming right out of college to the NBA is not very good when you talk about head coaching. But I think he's done it consistently, and then he's won at a high level. Yes, he has talent. You have to have talent to get it done. But again, keeping the attention span of these guys and getting them to play extremely hard at whatever his system is something that I admire in Brad Stevens.
When you talk about tomorrow night in the system and getting guys to play within the system, how difficult is it then for what you've gone through? Because you guys have gone through a head coaching change. The system kind of remained the same, but everybody's got their own kind of style of doing things.
Yep.
You got a different voice. You've got young guys. You've got older vets like yourself. You're trying to help these young guys. How difficult is it when things begin to swirl like that?
Well, I think it's very difficult. And that's why I applaud our guys, our coaching staff, and management to a certain extent, because anytime you have change, there's going to be certain guys that are over here and then the other guys are on this side and then the guys that are in the middle, and how you bring those guys together for one common goal, even though the head of the ship, so to speak, is not there, is the sign of how you're going to have a successful team. And I think we've weathered that storm. We've gotten through it. But then you throw in the injuries. We've tried to implement two guys that have primarily been out since the coaching change. And, you know, it's an adjustment. And so, you know, with that being said, that adjustment period should be over now, even for a coach. I have rotational guys that have been out. Now they come back. But I got guys that have been playing well. And then, you know, I got to kind of get them in. Now the guys that were playing well, they're not really out there as much. I mean, that's a huge adjustment when you're talking about playing basketball at the highest level. You can do it, you know, in the regular season, you know, in a 82-game season. But right in the playoffs when things matter the most, it's very hard to do. And so that's why I think now that we've had two games in the playoffs, we know which guys are able to help us at what capacity. Now we can kind of rein in our rotation, get our lineups right, and then go out here and fight.
And a lot of people have talked about, like you're saying, lineups and what works and what doesn't, how the Boston Celtics in game one more or less had five guys score 20 points or more. One guy had 19. Is that really unique? Do you think that that is a style of play that can really, really win at the highest level in the NBA? Or, because a lot of times you see it's usually two, three. You've heard of the big threes. You never really see it spread across five guys like that. Can they continue to play that way when they implement a Gordon Hayward and a Kyrie Irving, they get those guys back? Or do you believe, obviously, like the way the Bucks play, where it's Giannis, Chris, sometimes Bledsoe, Jabari was obviously in that conversation. Mm-hmm. Can they win at the highest level, or is it better to only have two stars or three maximum stars?
Well, I always say you have to have three studs to have a chance. It used to be back when I first came to the league, you had to have two, right? You think about Stockton, Malone, Peyton and Kemp, Shaq and Kobe, Jason Kidd, and Vince Carter. I mean, you know, you had two stars. You had a realistic shot to win. Then they started to form the big three with KG, Pierce, and Ray Allen. So then, I mean, you look at D-Wade, LeBron, and Chris Bosh. I mean, these guys, when you got three stars, I mean, you just automatically have an opportunity. So now we go to the era where Golden State has four all-stars. I mean, how much talent do you possibly want on a team? When I won the championship in Dallas, I mean, we had Dirk. He was a megastar, obviously. But you had a guy like Jason Kidd later on in his career, a star still, you know, with the name. Sean Marion, Tyson Chandler, myself, guys that were role players but were stars in their role. I think that's what you look at when you look at the Boston Celtics. Yeah, those two star players are out right now. Add Horford, that would be a third. But those guys around them are stars in their roles, and they're playing at the highest level right now. Now, consistently, can they continue to do that? It remains to be seen. The odds, if you're a betting man, says I don't believe it. I don't think so. But right now, they're proving that they can. And I think for them to have success, as long as those guys are out, yeah, they have to have six to seven guys in double digits every single night for them to win games.
When the Bucks go back years, when they were hot and you had the big three and Ray Allen, you know.
Oh, there
Robinson,
you go. Ray
Sam,
Allen, Big
Sam
Dog,
Cassell.
Sam I Am.
But I go back to, and when you talk about the role players, Scotty Williams had a huge role.
Oh,
he
yeah.
was kind of heart and soul, and he gets pulled off that plane before game six against in Eastern, or game five in Eastern Conference Finals, and things kind of went down from there. But I'm looking at it and saying, what are the roles on this team? Because everybody either is trying to make a name, trying to do something. We've talked about it time and again where you've even said sometimes guys will play selfish because they want to beat a man.
Mm-hmm.
How do you convince guys at this point in the game you got to trust one another? Because
yeah.
it seems like when guys get involved, go back to that San Antonio game. You guys had 26 assists.
Yep.
26 assists. You haven't done that. I haven't been able to replicate that very often since then. When you guys pass the ball and get everybody involved and everybody suddenly becomes energized in the defensive end, how do you get the guys to go back and say, this is the way we need to play basketball?
Well, it's evident. I mean, that is our key to success. It's 25-plus assists tonight. We're winning 90% of our basketball games. Getting back in transition, setting our defense, and taking away the three-point shot. I mean, those are our three keys to victory. And if we can do that consistently, we'll win. We'll win. And I think game three, I mean, that's what you have to look at. That is how you're built, okay? Other teams are built differently. This Milwaukee Buck team is built on passing the ball, transition defense, and eliminating the three-point shot. That's our system. And if that system isn't good enough, then we'll be going home. But I believe we have the players to execute that system. We got a good game plan, and we just got to go out there and get it done.
No doubt. And what have you seen from Chris Middleton in this series? He came out, obviously, hit big shots, played well first two games. But what have you seen in these first two? I feel like he's been at a very different level. People have questioned how good is he, how consistent is he. What have you seen?
He's been awesome offensively. I still think defensively he has to take much more of a challenge. The more aggressive Jaylen Brown gets, the more defensively he has to be locked in. But we're asking a lot out of Chris. I mean, you're asking him to guard one of the youngest, brightest stars in our league that's very aggressive and come back on the other end and put the ball in the basket. So it's a huge, tremendous task, but that's why you get paid the big money. So he showed up. He's been here consistently here the last two or three months, putting up big numbers and doing it at a high efficiency rate. So we love what he's doing for us. Giannis, there's no complaint whatsoever about what Giannis brings to this team every single night. You know, Bledsoe, he's been up and down, but he's had a run here the last month where he's been dominant. And so you get him to be dominant in that first group, and then you get some type of offensive spark or defensive disruption from your bench, and you have enough to beat this Boston Celtics team.
Who's the spark? Who's the guy that you're looking to?
Oh, you're looking right at him. The jet fuel is the spark, baby. And you know, we're going to have it riled up in the Bradley Center tomorrow night. I just can't wait. I'll go over here at about 10 p.m. and get the brims loose, get the nets loose. But, you know, for me, it starts with me. You know, come in and impact the game in any way you can. Get a steal. Get a rebound. Dive on the floor. Dive in the front row. Hit a three. Two or three threes would be nice. And then you got another guy I look at is Dellavedova. You know, he's been out a while. We need him in there to mix it up. Slam somebody. Slap somebody. You know, run somebody over, set hard picks, and facilitate and knock down a couple big threes. I mean, we are two guys that have been here before and that understand about playoff basketball, what it means. And I think that's where you'll get your spark from. Another guy that I'll look for, if for some odd reason coach goes a different direction, is Thon Maker. He has to be foaming at the mouth right about now. This kid hadn't played in two or three months. Last year he had a phenomenal run and was a big, big help to us in the playoffs. And a guy with his type of energy, his passion, could really come in and spark this series.
When you start talking about hard play, how much of in the postseason do the officials let you go with hard play?
Plenty. Yeah? And they let a lot go. I mean, we put the film up, and we obviously are going to show them beating us up. But, hey, I got a couple free licks in, too, the other night. Felt great, too. But they're not going to call much. They're just not. I mean, and it's how it should be played. I think the regular season should be played like that. Then you don't have anything to adjust to, you know. But as a young team, there is an adjustment that has to be made when you're talking about a team that, you know, that's not our mantra. That's not how we play. We play a up-and-down, loose, run-and-gun style of play. But now in the playoffs, it slows down a little bit. And so a much more experienced veteran team knows how to use that physicality. And it takes one or two games to get adjusted to it.
It's the Milwaukee Basketball Hour featuring Steve Novak. I'm Bill Michaels, Jason Terry alongside. We're at Cafe Benelux, is where you can track us down, come in and say hi.
show's here for another half hour or so, and I'm sure the Jets going to be getting ready to head over to the Bradley Center, as he said, to loosen up the rims and loosen up the nets, but you can still give a high five on the way out the door if you're not down here yet. Swing by and say hi. We're brought to you by our friends at Baker Tilly, Sharp Literacy, Third Coast Provisions, Coors Light, West Bend, the Silver Lining, and Annex Wealth Management, along with our great friends here tonight from Hupi and Abraham as well. Stay tuned. We got more right after this. Welcome back. It's the Milwaukee Basketball Hour featuring Steve Novak. I'm Bill Michaels, Jason Terry, the Jet, alongside of the Milwaukee Bucks. Bucks trying to get back into this thing, get a win at the Bradley Center, get a little mojo going, and move on to game four, which would then take place on Sunday with the Bucks back at the Bradley Center tomorrow night. Time now for the Hupi and Abraham. Good drive hoop to the, or drive to the hoop of the game, and we'll give him some credit. It was Jabari Parker. Take a listen.
Well defended by Milwaukee. Well, Eric Bledsoe used his body, got into Rozier, forced him out about 4 feet from where he wanted to shoot that from. Back door, Parker with the slam. Nice dime by John Henson.
There you go. That was Jabari Parker with his couple of points as he slammed it home. That's the Hupi and Abraham good drive to the hoop. And Hupi and Abraham remind you, never, ever text and drive. Back here at Cafe Benelux down here in the Third Ward. And we're right near the public market, as a matter of fact, kitty corner to it. So if you want to swing by, say hello, please feel free to do so. Now, you're coming back home. Different energy at home, right?
Oh, yeah.
Different load of energy. You're hoping, obviously, the fans sell it out and really juice the place up. I know there's going to be a lot.
They better have this thing sold out.
I'm throwing it out there.
If not, I got plenty of Terry family members that are willing to fly in and pack the 300 level.
So when you come out at home, it has to be. You get that initial burst of adrenaline.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But you got to capitalize on that right away to kind of ride that
right
wave,
away.
Right?
This is not a game where you want to get down 10, 15 points, let them hit a whole bunch of threes in the first quarter, and now they're confident. Now you're in a real dogfight, and it's going to take everything you have to get back into the game because, again, you got to remember the best thing about this series and home court advantage is we play tomorrow night, late game, 8:30, to turn around so quick because Sunday we play at noon. So who gets the advantage? That's where home court advantage really kicks in for us. And our strength is in numbers. Their numbers are down. And so we have to wear them down here in game three. Not looking too far forward, but knowing that we have an early start Sunday afternoon.
And do you think location is the single biggest thing at this point that shifts series? When you've watched series in the past and people go, oh, that series is over, 2-0. All of a sudden it changes location. Is location really that important or is it hype?
It just depends, you know, the type of team you have. And, again, when I look at the Boston Celtics, at home consistently this season is why they were the number two seed. They won at a high rate at home. Now, us, we're Jekyll and Hyde. We can win at home. We can lose at home. We can beat you on the road. We can get whooped on the road like we did in Philly. So, for us, I don't think it matters. But what does matter is we're down 0-2. We're at home. We need our fans to come out and be the best they've been all year.
When you talk about being that Philly game, Jabari was with us last week, and he said, you know what, because we were all expecting very quiet flight, everybody was down. He said, you know what, we kind of joked around, not about the game, but just we were kind of together, and we were also saying that the slate's clean. We're going into the postseason, the slate's clean, we know we got business to take care of. Not to say, because fans want to hear you be mad and somebody's beating up a Gatorade cooler and everything, but on things like that coming home, more of a camaraderie thing, wasn't it?
It's just a different era. I mean, teams I've been on in the past, we're going to be pissed off. We're not talking. There's no cards being played. It's just quiet. This group of guys is just different. I mean, we can be at shoot-around tomorrow. Guys will be shooting half-court shots and be loose, and you'll have nothing to worry about because you know they're going to show up. On the other hand, you come in, guys are stone-faced. No one's talking to each other. Somebody's pissed off. Uh-oh. You better be concerned because this is not that group. You just don't have the personalities of guys that feed into that type of deal.
And as a veteran guy, how do you deal with that? Like
it's,
you said,
it drives me nuts. I know how to deal with stone face, not talking to anybody, just nothing. No social media. The laughing and joking would piss me off. And so I've had to make that adjustment as I've gotten older and played on different teams. Prime example was in Houston when I played with James Harden and Dwight Howard. Dwight Howard, the funnest, coolest guy you'd ever know, and was never serious when it's time to get ready for a game. And I kind of had to, you know, I barked at him one time, and he was like, why would I change? I'm going to go out here and get 20 and 20 tonight. And lo and behold, he went out and got 20 and 20. I said, hey, man, if you want to laugh and joke and fart on people. And, I mean, he would just do crazy things. It's like, come on, you're playing around too much. But he played well. The pressure sometimes is too intense for some of these young men that haven't had any adversity throughout their upbringing. And I think that's why you get, you know, the loose playing rides and stuff now.
When you go back to when you said somebody was mad, pissed off, you go to a guy like Jabari who's upset about the playing time, and you talked about kind of roping him back in. When guys start to go a little bit sideways mm-hmm. like that, now, when is it your job as a teammate? And you might have been in that situation or oh, yeah. seen it where somebody then has to go, hey, the knock on the door, coach wants to see you. I mean, is that handled in a locker room or behind closed doors? Or
For me, it's on site. Yeah. So I try to jump in right away when I see it. It's hard to do sometimes in a ball game because you got a lot of different things going on you're trying to manage. But when I see a situation like I did the other night, I let it take place. I let it simmer. And then before shoot around, I shot Coach K a message, somebody that he respects and that he knows he can't shuck and jive with. Coach K shot him a message back, shot me a message that he had talked to him. My job was done. So I'll try to find little nuances like that where I know I can delve in and try to get to a player without having it to be me directly sometimes. Other times I'll be like, hey, when Jason Kidd was here, hey, look, Coach ain't happy, brother. You might want to stop by his office. Then they'll go by, holler at him, be like, man, thanks, Jet, man. I appreciate that. I really needed to talk to him. You know what I mean? So, I mean, that's my role, and it's been like that now for 4 or 5 years.
And how important is that?
Oh,
I think just versus, right, like you're saying, there were certain coaches that if a guy was doing things wrong or just something he didn't like, right, you would lose him for a month. You would be suspended.
God.
How important is that, though? When you have a guy who's making $5 million or $20 million, that there is a vet, that there is a coach who's willing to talk to him, not lose him for the season?
Well, I think it's very important, again, one, for that individual, because obviously when you're talking about a young player, hopefully he has more and more years that he'll be in this league, and then he'll be in that same position, and he can do the same thing. Two is the guys around him. Remember, one person can impact the whole bunch, and so you don't want to have one guy stray off, and guys are looking and wondering what's going on with him, and they're not able to focus in on the job they need to do. And so that's why it's very important to have that guy that can kind of bring, you know, the team back together.
How important are your position coaches? Because it's not all the time the head guy. It's the guy that you work with on a daily basis who's always got his elbow in you, who's working with you, who's running the drills. That's the guy that really a lot of the times – I mean, going back to the football side of things, your position coach was your guy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you very rarely dealt with a head coach. Basketball's a little different because it's a smaller roster, obviously. But the guy that's putting his elbow in you, hitting you with the pads, trying to swat your shot every night, that's your confidant.
Well, that's your guy. And for me, throughout my career, it's been guys like he was a Milwaukee Bucks strength coach, Robert Hackett. There's team psychologists. Hell, you might even talk to the chef. I mean, there's always somebody within an organization, and that's why we say we need everyone. As the playoffs started, we said we need everyone. It could be the janitor, the chef, the film coordinator. Whoever it is that has that connection with one of these guys is always a very integral part.
And where is this organization at in terms of that, in terms of top to bottom, chef, training staff, coaches, the docs? You've been a lot of places.
Yeah. They're up there. They have put the people in place that understand the overall picture of what this organization is trying to get accomplished. And I think that's very key. From top to bottom, is everyone on the same page? And I think that's what you have here now. And but it's been being built over the last 2 or 3 years, and definitely since I've been here, I've seen that change and that development in the staff, in everyone they bring in. It's been great. It's been refreshing to be a part of, because some organizations, honestly, I've been in Boston, for example. They've had people they've had around them for 30 years, you know, people that would never change jobs. But now, again, as you're dealing with this generation, I mean, you have to kind of bring in different people from different areas and different walks of life. And so I think that's what the Bucks have done a great job of.
If you want to find us, you can find us on Instagram at Instagram.com at MKE B-Ball Hour. Also Twitter at MKE B-Ball Hour as well, if you want to track us down there. We're going to go ahead and take a quick break. Big question when we come back regarding coaching. I want to get into that discussion. Steve alongside Novak. Jason Terry's here as well, broadcasting live at Cafe Benelux. We've got more right after this. Welcome
Welcome back to the program. Final segment of the Milwaukee Basketball Hour, and we are broadcasting live at Cafe Benelux. I'm Bill Michaels alongside Steve Novak, who is featured here, as he is each and every week on the program. Also joined by, from the Milwaukee Bucks, Jason Terry. The Jet is hanging out with us as well. And a lot of people blowing up Twitter right now, Jet, and talking about this team, this season. And I want to ask it, but I'm going to ask it in a very delicate way because it's not the easiest topic to talk about. But when you've got a coaching change, and there's all the speculation about coaches who will and who won't be coming in and whether or not this guy or that guy has the job, how difficult is it as a player? Because you've got a job to do, and you don't know what the future holds for the rest of the organization. So how difficult is that to just keep the tunnel vision going?
It's not very difficult at all. I mean, when you're in the playoffs right now, you're so focused in on the task at hand that anything else doesn't really matter. I mean, because those are things that you can't control. And so, again, if we're talking about locked in and focused, you don't even worry about that.
When you, with your experience in a postseason, let's be honest, do you ever bring it in and just bring in rings and people that say, this is where you want to be, guys? Well, you know, eye on the prize.
Myself, Joe Prunty, and Dellavedova, we brought our championship rings in before the series started. Passed it around the room. Guys touched it. They felt it. They looked at it. But, you know, there's only so much you can tell somebody. They really got to go through it and experience it. Because if you don't, it's like, nice ring. You know what I mean? So you want to go through it. And hopefully this Bucks team one day will get to that point. But it's all about the journey. I mean, I had to lose a final series before I was able 4 or 5 years later to go out and win one. And so, and I always think about the one I lost more than the one I won. And so it's all about that journey. And I think these guys are at that point now where you've been in the playoffs. You've been up 1-0 and lost to Toronto. Now you've been down 0-2. What a story would this be for these guys in their career, especially a guy like Giannis who's young, Chris Middleton, Bledsoe, these guys. Even for myself, to be down 0-2 once again in a series and to be able to come back and come out of here and advance to the next round.
And like you said, man, in these playoffs, it's like, are you able to relate to guys who haven't been in these playoffs that 0-2 is actually a rather common thing? Do the guys get that? Do they understand? Is the spirit high? Do they believe you when you tell them that?
I really don't think they even know what that is. Again, you have to be in it. And, I mean, I was there. I told you, in 04-05, I'm down 0-2. We lose two games in a row at home. It felt like the worst thing ever. And so we came out in Houston, game three, pregame, and it was like, it was just dead silence in the locker room. Avery Johnson puts on the film. Here we are, think we're about to watch personnel and the scouting tape, and it's the Roy Jones greatest knockouts. And guys were like, are we watching here? And Roy starts knocking guys out. 5 minutes later, he stops the film. You get the message? And guys were in their shadow boxing. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm going to hit somebody. And we go out there and we put a number on them in game three, win game four, lose game five, come back, win game six, and then beat them in game seven. It was just, I mean, but you think about those little defining moments in a series. And I'll always remember that film session and being down 0-2. So hopefully that defining moment will be here shortly, within hours. And we'll see what happens. But those are the stories. Those are the memories that got to stay with you for the rest of your life.
When you talk about getting guys motivated like that, how much experience for the guys that were here last year losing and going home and remember that feeling? I mean, how much does that stick with you, and how much does that stick with a young bunch?
It definitely stuck with me. I mean, when we're in the last two games of the season and we're talking about positioning for the playoffs, and it's a possibility of us finishing sixth, seventh, or eighth, and we could either play Toronto, Boston, or who knows, I'm like, man, bring on Toronto. Do we want to lose these two so we can get some back? You know, payback is everything to me. You know, that's what I thrive off of. I think it would have been tremendous to have a series with Toronto, and it didn't happen, so it was disappointing. But, you know, all summer long you thought about it. And I know a guy who had a big part of that was like Dellavedova, Thon Maker. You know, and that's why I said Thon Maker could be a tremendous X factor in this series by his energy and his presence alone, because he's had that taste of failure, and it should motivate him. And we'll see, but hopefully we get him out there. tomorrow night.
And what's the – so, like you said, the losses in the playoffs are the ones that you remember the most, but what does winning a series teach you? So these guys haven't won a series. You have – you and Della Vadova have been through. What does the winning of a series, of several series, do for you that you can relate to these guys?
And, again, I think it's how you win a series. We swept the Lakers on our way to winning the championship in 2011. Cool feeling. It was great. I had one of my greatest games ever. But I think being down and coming back and winning a game seven in the other team's arena like I did in 06 against the Spurs was like a championship to me. Nobody goes into San Antonio, let alone be a game seven, and come out victorious. It was just the greatest feeling ever. And it was our rival. So I think this organization winning a playoff series this year in the fashion that it will have to be done will speak volumes about where this club can go in the future.
Who comes to you and wants to talk and says, tell me what it's like?
Bledsoe talks to me a lot. Giannis is another guy that he wants to know everything. What was Dirk doing? What did he eat? How did he work out? What was he saying? Like, he's always
– how comparable are their games? How comparable are their games? Because we talk, because Dirk was from the outside.
Yeah.
He was a hitter. I don't know if you can compare the skill sets because Dirk wasn't a guy that handled the basketball real well. He was a spot-up guy.
Yeah, there's not many comparisons. The only comparison that I have with those two is, one, the work ethic, and then, two, the progression of I'm the guy, everybody's looking at me, but I don't have to do it myself. Once that realization kicks in, and it makes everyone else around them better, I think that's when you'll see Giannis play at the ultimate level. That he will be peaked out at that point when he gets to that point in his game.
And does he need to continue to do in this series exactly what he's done? He has been efficient.
Oh, no question.
He is, or does he need to change anything? There's been talk about how can we get more guys involved? How do they win the series with only two guys scoring? Does he continue just doing what he's done?
I think Giannis has to continue to be dominant. If Horford's going to guard him, continue to make him work, punish him. But when the defense collapses, go ahead and kick out and trust your teammates that they will make the shots. And he's been doing an outstanding job. The result just hadn't been there. But if you look at his numbers top to bottom, he is putting in tons and tons of work. And it's going to pay off. It's a long series.
Physical statement. Coming out tomorrow night, you want to be physical defensively. Who's the one guy that you really would like to say, if we can get a piece of, slow him down, we got a legitimate shot at this? Al Horford?
The little leprechaun on their uniforms. If I can get a piece of him, I'll tear him up. I might even just tear him off my bicep tonight as I'm shooting. But anybody with that uniform on tomorrow, we want you. Even Brad Stevens, I want your suit. I want every inch of that court. We're going to come out tomorrow in the Bradley Center and protect home court.
There you go. That is Jason Terry. He is Steve Novak. Before we get out here, we want to say thanks, everybody, and we hope we're back next week. If the Bucks win, we'll be here. If not, it's been a hell of a ride. Thanks to the staff and management from our friends at Lammy Sports who are all in the house. If you want to raise your hands real quick for everybody that's here so they can give you a nice round of applause. They set this up. They do a great job with it. Our first time at Cafe Benelux. Fantastic place, fantastic eats, good people here. Thanks so much for coming out. We also want to say thanks to our sponsors who have been with us all season long. Baker Tilly, Sharp Literacy, Third Coast Provisions, Coors Light, West Bend, The Silver Lining, Annex Wealth Management. Also, don't forget to our friends at Baker Tilly, the accountants and advisors, five offices throughout Wisconsin. They're here to assist all your business needs. And don't forget about the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation of Wisconsin. You can check them out as well. Thanks to everybody for showing up tonight. Thanks to everybody for coming down to the Cafe Benelux. This has been the Milwaukee Basketball Hour featuring Steve Novak. I'm Bill Michaels for Jason Terry. Have a good night, everybody.
Go Bucks, go.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.